This episode of Prompt Pod brought to you by Getting Up Early. Most people think getting up early stinks, but I'm here to tell you it's the best part of the day. In those first few hours, the world is yours and anything is possible. It's truly your time to make magic happen. Welcome everyone to another episode of Prompt Pod, an open-ended exploration into the field of AI and my quest to document conversations with bright minds in the space. I'm your host, Danny Kirk, and today I'm joined by Dr. Sandra Laughlin. Sandra is a learning scientist and organizational psychologist, which means her superpower is getting people to do hard things. Sandra is the chief learning scientist at EPAM Systems, Inc., a leading digital transformation services and product engineering company, where she uses her superpower to help EPAM and their Fortune 500 clients do one of the most hardest, most critical things in modern business: build the right pipeline of talent and get current employees to develop complex new skills, change their mindset, and work differently. How, you might ask? By creating a skills-based integrated talent ecosystem and supercharging it with AI-based platforms. Sandra has received many awards and recognitions for innovative approach and demonstrated the impact of her work, including being named a global leader in consulting by Consulting Magazine in 2022. She also writes and talks extensively on the topics of learning, motivation, and behavior change in careers, as well as the future of higher education. Sandra, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's kind of set the table here. Could you give our listeners the overview of the landscape of L&D these days?
Yes. Well, it's changing rapidly. So let me start by describing what it has been until relatively recently. In most organizations, L&D has been a nice to have. You know, companies talk a lot about the need for education, and I'm sure they mean it, but L&D is often one of the first things that gets cut down or cut out when times get tough. In the most, past few years, that's really been starting to change a lot. As the skills progression has continued to rapidly evolve, as companies are, trying to find scarce talent, keep people happy in their careers, like the learning emphasis has really shifted a lot. That said, L&D has really been focused on one relatively narrow aspect of learning, which is formal training, right? So we know that, everyone's gone through school, you sit in classrooms, you have, online content that's delivered to you. Those are very, very important things. But it's really, like the research shows, only about 10% really of how people learn. The rest of the 90% is through things like experiences and mentorship and reflection and research and feedback and practice. And so what I see changing a lot now, because of the introduction of AI and the de-emphasis on content, is really like L&D is starting to really think about, well, how can we go beyond the typical training platform or classroom to facilitate this business critical learning in new and, I would argue, better ways.
Very interesting. And I know when we first spoke, you and I kind of discussed how people work and connecting old ideas to new. So could you give us a little bit of an overview of how people learn in general and maybe how the progress of L&D is going in a more correct direction with AI these days?
Yes. So, I love talking about learning. So thanks for giving me the opportunity. It's something that actually a lot of people don't understand. So when we talk about learning, just in our vernacular, we talk about people being like sponges and absorbing it, or I'm going to transmit my information to you. And it's this idea that somehow if you're exposed to content that, magic happens and, you will learn things. In practice, surprise, it's not actually how it works. There are a few factors that are really critical to understand about how to create an effective learning environment for anyone, whether it's in a classroom or non-classroom setting. The first is that there are different kinds of knowledge. So you can have declarative knowledge, so things that you can say or recite. These are going to be definitions and things like that. There's procedural knowledge, which is how the process. So like I'm gonna know how to get from step A to step Z in all the right ways, making sure that I address all the critical components. And then there's something called conditional knowledge. And this is really where things get rough. Conditional knowledge is where you're out in the wild and, you know, you're able to just be in an environment and you perceive a situation and you recognize that that situation is a condition in which you need to apply something that you already know. So we call this also transfer, the transfer of information or knowledge from one setting, a classroom, into another setting, the workplace. And that is probably one of the most significant challenges facing any learning professional. It's really hard to get people to transfer what they have, what they can recite or recognize into real life. Beyond that, there are different levels of information or learning, I guess I could say. So the first one, the lowest level, is knowledge. So again, this is like your definitions of things. Like, then it shifts into understanding. You can put some of these ideas together. And then you get into what we call the higher level thinking skills or critical thinking skills, which is synthesis, analysis, evaluation, and then finally creation. So traditionally, L&D has kind of been down in the, like I would call like lower levels of learning, focusing on declarative knowledge and conditional knowledge. But now, especially because AI is really good at that stuff, AI can tell you what things are and some basic steps for how to get there. What it struggles to do is to help you recognize and, you know, have that conditional knowledge, being able to be out in the world in your job and see places to apply what you know. It will get better and it's getting better already. But this is going to be a place where you're going to need humans to be much more involved in the educational process through, again, experiential learning or coaching or mentorship or these like real world, I'm going to put my ideas, my knowledge into practice, and someone or some things are going to give me feedback on how I do. Those are kind of, again, there's a lot that goes into learning, but those are two really, really important things that people should know, and L&D professionals should really start embracing as the learning landscape is changing.
Are you a fan of AI being kind of a teacher and a point of feedback for people then on the kind of in the learning vein?
Absolutely. Right. AI can do a ton of stuff and it's actually super, super valuable in doing things like in a classroom or even a workplace setting, being like your learning coach, right? There's all these protocols and prompts out there. There are companies who are training AI to be exactly that. It's kind of like your friend in the learning space. So someone who can quiz you on things, someone who can remind you that you have a test coming up or kind of, you know, bring back questions that you learned 6 months ago to remind you and kind of keep your knowledge and memory fresh. There is such an incredible potential for AI. And this is one of the reasons that, you know, I would argue it is going to dramatically, dramatically change the educational landscape from, you know, little kids all the way through senior adult learners.
We'll come back to kind of the corporate L&D side of things, but let's lean into that a little bit. How do you believe it'll change the kind of educational landscape, both higher ed and younger?
Oh, well, this is going to get controversial. Let's start with higher education because it's a place that is very critical from a business perspective, right? So, you know, companies need a pipeline of talent. That talent often comes from, you know, colleges or universities. Historically, colleges and universities have functioned, they don't change fast, right? Like the way that people were taught 100, 200 years ago is very similar to how they're taught today. And the skills that are addressed in a kind of formal learning setting with a, you know, an expert on the stage, like talking to people and students, you know, coming, like saying back what they heard in the class. This is a not actually a very good learning model, like in general. And what's happening and what's been happening over the past few decades is that the skills that are developed in higher education are getting farther and farther and farther away from the skills that employers need, you know, new graduates to have on day one. And what's what's exciting slash terrifying about this, the broader use of AI, is the fact that it is exceptionally good at doing the kind of, you know, giving back what I heard, like, you know, the general tasks that students are expected to do in college. So this would be like multiple choice questions, even open-ended tests, essays, like papers, like these are all things now that AI is actually optimized to do. And so what this means is that a few things. One is that if universities don't change and really start to embrace the higher, you know, the higher knowledge, like the higher education or higher learning knowledge space, and really start to emphasize those skills that are going to be required for students, like prompt engineering, for example, on day one of their job 4 years from now. Like, just think about freshmen coming in today are going to be in a whole new world in 4 years. What you're going to see is I would argue, a seismic event in the higher education space, because companies can't wait for that anymore. And I'm seeing across, you know, different industries, executives who are saying, like, how do I create my own university? How do I fix this gap? Because we can't allow that gap to persist. It's the time has come where it's no longer viable for us to do this.
How did that gap occur? Was it universities pursuing rankings and test scores that gap started to widen?
Yes, but any organization, any person is going to respond to how they're measured and incentivized, right? So higher education has long been incentivized by rankings. The rankings could be used for good, but they have often been used for evil when it comes to learning, which is to say that they have historically really emphasized research productivity, grant funding, like all of that sort of thing. Which in and of itself is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. We need science to advance and fields to continue to grow. But what it means by universities combine that research focus with the education. And if you're incentivized as a faculty member to focus on your research, to focus on grant funding, you're necessarily going to de-emphasize the focus on education. And it's compounded by the fact that faculty are not in any way, in reality, hired into roles or promoted into tenure because of their great educational capabilities. Like in most universities, and certainly the top research schools, that is absolutely the case. Then the other factor really that has hamstrung higher education from a learning perspective is the fact that faculty, the whole system is built on tenure. And again, tenure, being able to say whatever it is that you want to say, protect speech, you know, protect exciting and new and provocative ideas is very, very, very important. But when you have a system that emphasizes things that are not learning in the higher education space, and the whole system is governed by people who have been socialized, brought up, and, you know, have built that system, it's very, very difficult to make, I would say, even like not that exciting changes, but to respond to what's happening in the space right now. Higher education is designed not to change, and it has to now.
And I suppose on the other side of things, businesses are constantly changing, their incentives are constantly changing, which means the KPIs by which people are measured are also constantly changing. So it's just that's probably how the two get wider and wider. Would you agree?
Yes, 100%, right? Like, you know, we call it shovel ready. Like we need, you know, students coming out of universities to be able to go on day one and create value for their organizations. And unfortunately, that again hasn't been happening for a long time. And so companies have created these bridge programs, or they'll hire a class of students, and then, you know, those kids are earning money but learning what they didn't learn in school. And, you know, this is getting much more and more and more expensive. The gap is getting wider and wider. And so now you have these universities who have an existential, or sorry, these businesses that have an existential need for high quality, productive talent as soon as possible, and a widening gap from universities. I think it's coming to a breaking point because the companies also have the money and what students want, which are jobs. So it's really it's very exciting. It's going to be a crazy ride for higher education in the next 2 to 3 years.
So you're clearly very thoughtful on all these subjects. I assume you have answers to all this?
Well, I certainly have thoughts on a lot of it. What's so scary to me, and I think to everyone about AI, is just no one really knows what it can do. And I heard someone yesterday, I was at a great conference on AI and the future of HR. And someone described society as being on like the upward, you know, the initial like upward ride of a roller coaster. And you get in the car and now you're being moved and we're reaching this like the tippy top of the first hill. And we're just hanging there and we're about to free fall and we know it. And there'll be some things that you can predict. You know, you're going to have your stomach, you know, jump up. There's going to be things that you know are going to happen, but you don't really understand what it's going to look like and, you know, what the path is going to be and the loops and the dips. And I think that's where we are. So do I have predictions? Yes. Do I have thoughts? Of course. Am I going to be right on everything? Probably not. I don't think anybody will, but it is a really exciting time for people like that are experts in fields to really try to, you know, look in this like their crystal ball and figure out what's going to happen even 2 to 3 years down the line.
There's a famous AI scientist, Max Tegmark, and he always says the view gets better as you get closer to the cliff, which is kind of a similar metaphor. Yeah, let's talk about specifics here. With kind of the bridge to work, with kind of going co-curricular, both with higher education and business, and kind of with the assumption that the goal is to get jobs at the end of higher education, which I think is a pretty fair assumption to kind of have, it sounds like the changes, a lot of them need to be made on the higher education side of things. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, for sure. It should be. Whether it's going to happen or not, or how quickly it's going to happen is the big question. Again, like just what scares me today is like, you know, I have some teenagers. They're not quite ready to jump into college yet, but they will be in a couple of years. And what's so scary to me is that the kids that are seniors today are going to enter school in the fall and go kind of on their little trajectory to get into their role. It'll take 4 years for them to get there. And in 4 years, the world would be completely different than it is today. And unfortunately, fortunately, right, there is a group of people who are dedicated to helping students be prepared for that future. But they don't know what that future is going to be. And because of all the reasons that I described previously, there's not a lot of comfort or interest in jumping, you know, going toward that cliff, right? And trying to see from a faculty member's perspective, like, what is that future going to be? They don't know. And the issue is that someone needs to figure this out today because, you know, we have like, they're starting, the school's not stopping, they're starting in the fall. And I think that is a big issue. What's a more likely development in this space will be corporations banding together in industry groups and starting to create as a competitor to higher education. There's a lot of just like ways that could look. It could be just the micro credentials that, you know, you learn this chunk, you learn that chunk, and, you know, it replicates a lot of what you would learn in school, but you can, you know, they're like Lego blocks. You can pull pieces that are, you know, unique to you or unique to your trajectory, put them all together, and it's called a stackable credential. And then, you know, you will, I'm sure, have some sort of assessments that are going to be required to get into companies. But if you can show that you can pass those assessments and you have these blocks of knowledge, that is going to, you know, might be enough to get you into a workplace. you know, you might also have organizations or, you know, companies or industry groups creating something that's relatively similar to university, because there's a lot of benefits to university and a lot of reasons people go there besides getting a job, right? You go there if you are in the traditional, you know, 18 to 22, 24 age, you go there to like grow up and get away from home and meet people and figure out who you are. Like, none of that's going to change. And so it is likely that there'll be a large group of students who want to still go to a place that is dedicated to learning, but, you know, have it be learning that is highly valuable for organizations, which means, I mean, there's a lot of that goes into this, which means that there's going to be a big question. If I'm going to be a business analyst, how much history do I want? How much history do I need? Right? If you give these kids and businesses all the reins, you're probably going to see a very unfortunate, I would argue, I don't know, like watering down of the liberal arts education. But on the positive side, companies very much need students to understand, I don't know, these professional skills or soft skills, how to work on teams, how to be resilient, you know, how to get up in the morning and keep going when you had a bad day yesterday, you know, how to have a growth mindset, you know, how to communicate effectively up, down, sideways, right? These are all incredibly important skills that, you know, employees need that universities are generally poor at developing. And so, it might be that as a society, there's a pendulum swing for a period of time from the liberal arts to the professional soft growth skills. And that will also be kind of a very interesting change for us as a society. And I don't think it's going to be, there are trade-offs to that.
You've got a lot of incredible degrees from some really amazing higher education institutions that somehow didn't make it into the bio, which says a lot about your background, that they didn't even make it in. Would you follow that same path today with where we're headed?
I don't know. I certainly wouldn't have known this when I was 18 years old, right? And even if I was 18 years old today, my parents wouldn't know it, even if I did, right? So this is not going to be a quick fix and a quick change. This is also not part of what I kind of described in the bio, but my company, EPAM Systems, is one of those companies that's building our own universities. We're in year one. I'm helping to design those, given my, you know, background in higher education and my learning background. And I'm designing this university to be something that, as a student, I would have loved. My kids want to go to this university that's like brand new, right? But the concepts are very, very exciting. And I think there is a way to bring all of these new forces together in a way that benefits students and employers equally and may actually end up costing less for everyone in the long run. So, this has been in my head for a few years. So would I go to it? Yes. How much we can convince everybody else to go to that in, you know, in a short period of time, that's an open question. But I think in some ways, the entrance of ChatGPT into kind of the global consciousness has created what I would call like the hole in the psyche, right? Like when you want people to change, they need to have some reason to do that. And I think this general recognition and some fear around AI is going to start to have parents and students be asking themselves, whoa, if I'm looking at getting a job in 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, you know, should I go to some of these amazing institutions that have existed for a long time? Or should I look for something that is going to be more likely to get me a job?
Assuming these universities won't change quickly, what are some evergreen things that they can do to involve AI or to kind of hedge the bets with AI, just assuming they won't, you know, completely change their tactics overnight? Do you have any specifics that you would just love to see peppered in there?
Yes, but I think it would start actually with bridging the gap between universities and employers. Like the gap is quite large. And I worked in a business school where the gap is actually like relatively quite quite small, but it's still very big. They're like, you know, you have companies who are spending, you know, millions of dollars every year to try to build co-curricular programming and stuff to teach the kids things that they don't, you know, they wouldn't otherwise have coming in. So I think the number one issue, you know, the recommendation that I would make to universities is it'll be weird and different, but you need to actually go start talking in meaningful and ongoing ways with the organizations that are going to employ your students. This is for two reasons. So number one is to understand that skills gap and what these companies are trying to achieve. And then the second is because every field is going to be changing so rapidly that higher ed is going to be really struggling to keep up. And the best way for them to stay as close to the curve as possible is to have a much deeper and tighter connection to industry. So that's, I guess, number one. And that really does segue into the AI conversation, because of course, people on the front line of AI are employers. They're all these businesses who are now having to think themselves, you know, what does a junior software engineer, you know, need to do 4 years from now? It's going to be completely different than what they do today. And you're seeing that in marketing. You're seeing that in every industry. And so, you know, these companies are going to be the ones who have the clearest idea, not today, right? But we're taking 6 months, 9 months, two years from now. They're going to have a much, much clearer idea of what they need students to be able to do when it comes to AI, not just how to use AI, but the new things that they will be able to do because of AI that they can't do today. And so in order to stay relevant, higher education needs to really immediately start to bridge that gap, open those lines of conversation. And by the way, not pretend that AI is a fad that's going away. Like, you can try to ban it. It's not going to work. Really, as higher education professionals, we need to be not only embracing it, but changing how we teach as a result to use it more effectively and to help students achieve more higher level skills, I would say, in the process.
Is the reason why it's not going away just because the efficiencies it creates on the demand side of things? You know, if employers can increase productivity by multiple orders of magnitude or decrease costs, there will just be demand for anybody that works with that. Is that why it's not going away?
Yeah, I mean, yes, for sure. And I think, you know, there's all these ads out there for $300,000 prompt engineers, like, that's going away. Like, you're going to need to learn prompt engineering for any role, just like you're taught in school, even like fourth, third graders, right? They're taught how to use the internet to search. To me, AI is not the internet. It's very, very different. But it is a skill that you can develop and you need to practice and refine over time. And so, you know, it's not going away for all the reasons that you just described. It's going to create entire new industries, and it's going to dramatically change what it is that we do every day and how we do our work. But I think I really think that, you know, universities, they just have to realize that it's here to stay. And what's scary for them and exciting for me is thinking about how it affects pedagogy, and very, very importantly, how it actually impacts the path toward expertise. Because, you know, as we all know, like, the people that are most facile right now with AI are the ones who are already expert, and they can evaluate when the answers are not correct. They can, you know, they can see where pieces are missing or things were underemphasized. Like, you have to be an expert to have that evaluative capability. What is a very much an open question is how students, again, coming in, you know, to school in September are going to build that expertise. Because normally, in like all of human history, you've built expertise by doing all the small, boring, you know, tasks that are the declarative knowledge and like all that stuff that AI can do exceptionally well. So the question is going to be, how do you leverage AI and at the same time help students? They're gonna have to learn the basics somehow. And so there's this conflict right now between what AI can do and how human beings actually learn. And that is why, you know, this is a very, very exciting moment for people in my field. You know, I thought momentarily about actually going back into academia to study this, because it is going to be just a seismic event in the cognition, human learning, neuropsychology space.
Yeah, let's talk about learning a little bit. If people don't have to remember things, don't have to know specifics, ideation maybe becomes a little bit less of a thing because AI can help with ideation. How does learning evolve? What do our brains become good at or different at compared to an AI?
So I don't know that learning can evolve. And I genuinely don't know. This is an open question because, like, again, this has never been available to us in the history of humanity. The closest thing that I can think of is math facts. Like, you know, poor third, fourth grade, fifth grade students, you know, slave over memorizing these things that no one finds fun, right? And everyone's like, you know, everyone's like, well, you don't need to know 5 times 5 equals 25 because a calculator can do that for you. Well, I guess that's technically true, but when you're in algebra a couple of years later and you see 5x equals 25, you need to know immediately that that's 5. And unless you had actually done that boring, stupid work of memorizing your math facts, like, you're not able to actually be quick and intuitive about things that come later. I don't know, honestly, if it's possible for human beings to skip over these lower level stages. I think we can do them much faster. And I think that, you know, there's some learning science involved here where, you know, we can teach people how to make connections between ideas in a much more compressed time frame. We can help them, you know, learn how to ask the right questions to truly understand something, as opposed to having that understanding build up over years and years. Like, I really do think that we can speed up that process. I don't know that we can skip over it. And so then, of course, that brings back to the question of academic integrity. If students can cheat, will they cheat? Like, there's a lot of open questions and a lot of deep thinking and experimentation that's going to need to happen to answer some of this.
I spoke with a CEO at an AI company recently, and he reminded me that coding is actually a third-party mutual language. Yeah. Humans don't know the language of coding. Computers also don't know the language of coding. Both have to be taught. Computers know binary, humans know English or whatever their language is. So that's the power of natural language processing or LLMs and things like that. So he's like, that's why coding goes away, because both parties actually have to learn it in order to communicate. He was optimistic because he says now anybody that knows English, and by English we mean any language, because anything can be translated very easily, that makes this technology potentially ubiquitous. Would you agree with that?
100%. Like, you know, if you get under the hood a little bit, AI is literally designed on how humans learn. It's designed because, again, we understand the world in the form of language. And so this is what makes it so impressive and so scary, because it is designed to mimic exactly how we learn by, you know, it connects the neural net, right? Like, the neural net is actually represented on the human neural network. It's the same concept and the same approach. This is where you have all these open questions around if it can do us, some parts of us, better than we do. What does that leave for us?
Artificial general intelligence, the kind of level of an AI that is at the same level of a human's IQ. A lot of people talk about that. Some people say it's 10 years out. Some people say it's 1 year out. Some people say 100, and some people say it's already occurred. Do you think that these LLMs have already hit AGI, or do you think that's still far in the future?
LLMs are very, very, very good at a specific slice of human intelligence, right? The human intelligence is actually, you know, quite complex. And there's something like creativity, for example, is an output of human intelligence. Like you can't be creative about something unless you truly deeply understand it and see the patterns in it and like associate those patterns to something else that looks different entirely. You know, human intelligence also extends to seeing patterns in human interactions. You know, being able to read a room, being able to, you know, there's having that intuition that something's going to happen. Like these are all forms of, and I guess facets of human intelligence. And so I definitely would not agree, I suppose, that AI has reached this level. Will it at some point? Maybe, right? Like if you think about all the things that I just described about human beings, those all come from inputs that we can see, hear, smell, taste, or feel. And as we start to develop, you know, we're talking about even like AI, like, you know, whatever, even today, is able to read images, read video. So a lot of that stuff that we get in terms of how we get information about the world and process it, it all is being now created and leveraged for AI. As I'm saying that, I'm getting a little bit nervous. I don't know the answer. It's definitely not where we are right now because there's a lot more to us than language, but we keep getting it closer and closer and closer.
What would convince you that it has happened?
Oh.
Or maybe not right now, in the future, 10 years down the road, whatever you want to call it. What's the event where you're like, well, all right, we made it.
You know what, when ChatGPT really came out in the fall, I was immediately reminded of this movie a few years ago called Her. And Scarlett Johansson was like this, you know, AI voice and like, you know, and everything was, you know, I forget the actor's name, but it was like his best friend. It was like his conscience. It was everything. And I began, we're getting much closer to that every day. And I think when we start having our own little, you know, person in your ear talking to you that understands you and sees what you see, hears what you hear, then I will know that humanity we're not that special, I guess. if we can recreate ourselves, like that's a lot of power. And that's, I think that's scary.
Yeah, it's either not special at all or incredibly special. It's like the two almost become the same. You become a god, but then you may realize, oh, the universe is bigger and there's probably other gods out there at the same time, yeah. You know?
Right. Yes. I just hope that, in like Star Trek, where the Confederation like wouldn't go to these new planets until they had reached some level of like human evolution where they stopped fighting with each other. Like there was a lot, like, you know, they'd reached this higher plane. My hope is that, you know, at the end, and I'm being facetious, but, you know, my hope is that by the time we get to the Her stage of our evolution, like there'll be somebody in a spaceship out there saying, all right, guys, there's a whole new world, a whole new universe. Let's start exploring it together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty confident of that. I mean, you know, our brains have evolved to see the negative, which I always try to hedge for in my own thinking. And you can't possibly fathom things that don't exist yet. So I do think that there is a major blind spot of like, oh, the next step, you know, like mm-hmm. we didn't know that existed. You know, we stepped through the other dimension, but obviously, certain risks getting there. Always our final question, what interaction with AI or interaction that you've heard about with AI has made you laugh the hardest?
I don't know if it was not an interaction with AI, but it was a quote about AI. And it came out in an article that it was talking about like the big Lambda, how open source AI is like gonna, you know, blow up. My favorite quote was from this guy, this journalist, who said, it's been 3 months since ChatGPT sent a rocket up humankind's collective backside or something of that. And it was the perfect descriptor, like a little bit gruesome, like hilarious, and just dead on. And I think that, you know, that mental image of like just being like, we're just being push super fast, you know, in a direction that we couldn't see when we were standing still is, I think it's about right. And I think that is what we all have to contend with and kind of get comfortable being on that journey.
Absolutely. Well, Sandra, thanks very much for coming on our show. If listeners are interested in learning more about what you're doing, where can I point them to online?
LinkedIn, I post there pretty regularly. And I also, you know, share a lot of the things that I find really interesting that others have posted. So it might be a good way to stay on top of this.
Perfect. I will link to that in our show notes. And excellent, Sandra, this was an absolute pleasure. Thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was a great time.
And thanks to you, my dear prompter, for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I have. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing and leaving a good review. Take care and always be prompting.